I'm sitting here with Venkat Subramanian at the Rails Exchange Conference in London. And Venkat, it's a pleasure to see you here.
Thanks, Kurt.
I'm not sure if there's any of our listeners or readers that actually don't know who you are, but just in case, we will I'll let you introduce yourself and give us a rundown as to what you do.
I just have fun. That's what I do.
You just have fun.
I program, talk about programming. I speak on various technologies, work with various technologies. If I were to define myself, I would define myself as the person who is shameless when it comes to picking technology. I probably use and fairly fluently program in 5 or 6 different programming languages. And I can switch between them by the hour if I need to. And I don't care which one I would use, depends on the project. So, and that's important to me because to me it's important to pick something that solves a problem rather than being biased towards one language or one technology.
So I guess then you're dealing with Java, C Sharp as a common one, C++ is a common one.
Sure. I started out a lot by programming in C++ and object database and so on.
Right.
Spent years with Java, C Sharp, Ruby, Rails, Ruby, Rails now, various, some amount of Perl, though.
So
certainly, absolutely,
right.
Any language.
Well, yeah, anything's a blessing after C++, in my humble opinion, I think, no. So you're here at the Grails conference now, speaking about Grails and Agile. So one's a technology and the other's a methodology, and how do they meet?
Sure. Let's talk about Agile for just a minute. One of the things that I care about a lot is developing applications and being successful with it. That's one of the reasons why I spend time not only thinking about it, but also writing The Practice of an Agile Developer with Andy Hunt. One of the things I want to do, just like how I would pick languages that I want to use, I want to pick technology, framework, solutions that can solve problems for me, or more precisely, solve problems for my clients. And what I really like about technologies that are coming up right now is that I can focus not on implementation, but more so focus on solution. And what I mean by that is, one of the key things about agile development, and a lot of people probably don't realize this because agile means different things to different people. To me, what Agile means is to focus on developing relevant working software. And what that means is that we spend time developing software that actually solves a customer's problem. How do I know if the solution that I'm developing solves their problem? And so we have these two circles. The outer circle is the feedback from the customers that what we are implementing actually is meaningful and useful for what they want us to do. And we, to get that outer circle, we want to seek feedback. We want to go to them, show something, and say, what do you think? Is this what you want? Are there things that you want differently? And when they ask us to change it, we don't want to go back after a long time. We want to go back very quickly. So the technology, the solution that we use, is something that should allow us to make this change affordable and quick. And that's what I like about these languages that are pretty dynamic, and frameworks also. When we do make these changes, you probably have seen this little thing that kids play with, right? The whack-a-mole. There's a little mole that pops up. The kid hits
and
with the hammer.
Hit it with the big hammer, yeah.
And whack, whack, and whack. Then as soon as they hit it, something
it disappears
else
pops. And something else pops up.
Yeah. And then these kids grow up and they program. And guess what happens to the systems they program, right? Most of the systems we work with are whack-a-moles. We fix one area and then something fails in another area. That's not going to build confidence among customers. So when they give us a feedback, we want to go back and provide a solution that works, solves the problem in the area, but not break in other areas. So the inner feedback cycle is where the code, we are able to know that it still is meeting our expectation, the programmer's expectations, and it's still functioning to the degree that it's expected to function. So these two feedback cycles is extremely important. What Grails allows us to do is by providing a great amount of code synthesis. Let's spend a minute on that before I go further. Code generation is so 20th century in my opinion. If you generate code, that's like a little sore. You want to kind of keep itching on it. People modify code and so on. You don't want to do that. Code synthesis is much more superior. When you synthesize code, it's not a code that's left on disk. It's in memory. It comes in, works for you. It's dynamic. It evolves in memory, goes away. And there's a lot of things you can depend on and use the service. Things like GORM and Grails give you this great amount of flexibility because of this code synthesis. So as a result, you are focusing more on getting your work done rather than trying to hammer this infrastructure. The infrastructure doesn't control you. You control the infrastructure. You are able to produce results very quickly. Go back to them and show them what you've done and get their feedback. And I think that's where the real benefit is, where you can be agile and focus on solving problems in a constructive way.
How does Grails support this code synthesis?
Grails depends on two things for what it does. One is the Groovy language itself. There are two strengths that you are depending on when it comes to Grails. One is the strength of the Java platform. We've been used to this for over years. And over the past, 10, 12 years, the Java language has become complex, but the Java platform has become more capable. And the second thing Grails depends on is the Groovy language itself, which is pretty dynamic. You got the strength of metaprogramming. You can have methods being injected dynamically and so on. And the other thing is the object relational mapping facility that Grails uses, which is the GORM. And in GORM, you're not doing generation of code. A lot of code gets synthesized. So when you are trying to access a data, it synthesizes the methods to find the data, save it, validate it, update it, so on.
But I'm a developer. Using this stuff, I don't really care how it gets the job done, or should I care how?
Well, you do, because if it is your responsibility to be creating these, and if not even creating these, if it's configuring these things, you are spending your time and effort spinning the wheels that you just shouldn't be spinning. So the fact that these things are getting synthesized for you, you don't spend your time and effort on it anymore. So as a result, as a programmer, you are spending your time on focusing on the higher level of abstraction and the solution you can provide rather than the low-level stuff that you don't have to worry about anymore.
So this is exactly how Grails is fitting into Agile? Is it just providing you...
Partly one. If that's all they did, that's not going to solve the problem still, because we'll still have the whack-a-mole problem. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Grails really helps us a great deal with is that from the get-go, it greatly emphasizes a test-driven approach. So the minute you create a model, if you notice, it doesn't only create a model class for you, it literally creates a template of a test class for the model. In fact, it plates a little caret for you, a method called test something, as if to plead you to start writing some test. So from the get-go, it encourages you to do not only test on the domain classes, but also it supports integration testing. So you can start not only writing code, but you start writing code in a test-driven approach if you want to. And this is where the inner feedback cycle comes in, where you're able to get the feedback to make sure that the problem you're solving doesn't break other parts of the system.
And that's one of the cornerstones of Agile.
Absolutely. It's the two cycles are extremely important, the inner circle and the outer circle. And they're not really... one within the other completely. There's a little bit of an overlap between them because they're tied to each other. But you cannot have, in Agile, you cannot have one feedback cycle without the other. If you only care about providing solution for the customers, then you have the whack-a-mole problem. You keep breaking things. If you only care about test-driven development, somebody said this, there's a difference between developing the software right and developing the right software. And those are extremely important things to keep in mind. Not only do I want to spend the time creating the software right, I want to make sure I created the right software. And so that is the inner circle and the outer circle. The inner circle tells me that the software is right. The outer circle tells me it's the right software. And one without the other makes no difference, makes no sense.
So then you use Grails to help you develop the inner circle.
The tools and the techniques that Grails provide you readily fit into the inner circle. And the fact that you can quite easily get the work done so fast so that you don't have to be spending the time creating the infrastructure. Mixing Ajax, for example, is almost trivial because of the integration of the different frameworks into it. So as a result, the outer circle is also quite possible because you're not taking weeks and months to get things done when you get the feedback. You could literally go back in hours and get the feedback and say, hey, is that what you wanted? Am I in the right track? And then that, you know, one of the things about agile development is, if your objective is to implement software that meets the expectations the customers had, you will fail. You cannot build a software based on what they wanted. You need to build a software based on what they want. So the smaller the feedback cycle is, the duration is, the more in sync with what they are evolving as. I mean, users, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, are human. They think. So when they tell us that they want something, their mind is not frozen. They keep thinking about it.
Well,
so,
and developers are human also, and they
absolutely.
And they obviously sometimes mishear
misunderstand exactly
what the users are asking for.
Absolutely.
Also.
Sometimes they miscommunicate. Sometimes we also hear what we want to hear and not what we are told. And also sometimes the users give us a solution rather than giving us a requirement. So the feedback cycle helps us to put us back on the same page. So absolutely, I agree with you on that.
So the real benefits then from your point from using from Grails and Agile is that you get good support for the inner circle and it enables good support for the outer circle.
Exactly.
With the, certainly there's some of this. Well, there's a whole track here at this particular conference on plugins, Grails plugins. And so integration of GWT, for instance, is something that is a possible
right
track. And that, again, I guess leads into your message.
Right. One of the other things about agile development is the smaller steps, smaller bites. You know, somebody said, how do you eat a pizza? I've been on the road too long. I can actually eat a large pizza. I've got the appetite for it. But how do I eat a large pizza? One bite at a time. You know, we are civilized people. I don't try to swallow a huge bite. So, and that is exactly with agile development. We want to take these smaller bites. So it doesn't matter what technology or things you can integrate with. You want to take the smaller bites, smaller steps, and Grails allows you to do that. There is no pressure for you to go off and take a massive amount. Here's another thing I really like about Grails. I can say this over and over. I would never be tired saying this. I like this, actually. And that is, a database at the end of the day, to me, is an implementation. And Grails does not require me to spend any time on a database when I start implementing a solution. I can postpone database as much as I want to. And to me, the advantage of that is I can develop a fully working application from the feedback point of view, show it to the customers, have them exercise it without having to persist any data. And when they say, yep, that looks like what we want, then I can go and tie that into the database.
Okay, now you got me here, because Grails is tightly coupled to Hibernate, right?
Not really. That's the beauty. It is tied to Hibernate or whatever implementation you want to tie it to. It doesn't require you to define the database schema. So you don't have to be defining a database schema on the first day or even the first week. It can take away from your object model. So Groovy is...
So how do you throw a tracer through that environment if you're not touching the database?
Mm-hmm.
When Hibernate says, you know, I want to touch the database.
Well, because by default, Grails allows you to talk to HSQL, the in-memory database.
Uh-huh.
And even there, you don't have to define the schema. It is capable of extracting the details it needs from the model. Now, Groovy allows you to do optional typing. Now, what optional typing means is, If you switch this to one end of the spectrum, you got dynamic typing. You don't have to say what type it is, or you can go all the way like Java and start giving type information. So if I define a model And if I start saying what type each of the fields in my class are, then it's able to extract the details right from that. So I don't have to be sitting there and defining the database schema, database structure. So I'm working at the Groovy code level, and the only time I really need to start interacting with the real database is when I really want to. And that is agility. There is an interesting principle, which is the Yagni principle. You aren't going to need it. And that is something important to keep in mind. Ron Jeffries coined the Yagni principle. It says, if you don't need this database table, if you don't need the schema, you're not forced to do it. So I can wait until my object model matures, and once it's reached a certain level of maturity, not based on my assumptions, but based on the realities of what the customer is expecting from the application, I can then tie it back to the database. To me, that is agility. I am not forced to do things and keep tweaking it because a framework requires me to do that.
Where's the object model existing? Is it existing in Groovy, or is it existing in Java? Is it in the middle of the framework, or
it exists where you want this? It exists where you want it to be. Rails gives you quite a bit of flexibility. By default, when you start this, Grails doesn't just recommend MVC. It doesn't just tell you it would be nice if you use model view control architecture. It tells you to use MVC, it follows you home, sits next to you, stares at you, and makes sure that you're doing MVC. So as a result, when you create the M, the model, that is where the real object model is. And you can do that in Java if you want to do it. You can do it in Groovy. Obviously, doing it in Groovy gives us a lot more benefit because we've got the dynamic language capability. At the same time, take advantage of this optional typing capabilities of Groovy as well. So ideally, I would put that in Groovy, but that's not a requirement, though.
So the persistence actually doesn't happen if I don't hook it up in the model.
You can configure that at a later time.
Right.
And you're not forced to do it on hour one or day one. And I can wait until I say, hey, go ahead and use it. Now, obviously, there's one small constraint, right? When people are playing with some data, you want to provide them a certain amount of test data for them to work with. Mm-hmm. Now, what you can do is there are bootstrappers available for you to load up a certain amount of initial data to start playing with. And again, keep in mind that the objective is not to provide a perfect solution. The objective is to get something working in front of them so they can give you the feedback. So, and you don't have to go on a tangent in one way or the other. While there are certain pieces of application which are quite demoable and exercisable, there could be other parts of the application that are fully functional and releasable. And you can take advantage of whatever you want to do in different parts of the application. So it's not an all or nothing proposition. So you decide to use it to the degree you want to, and it gives you that ultimate flexibility. As it comes to your judgment call as a programmer, you do what makes the most sense. And that's the beautiful freedom that it provides for you. It's lightweight. It doesn't burden you with things you don't have to do. And the things that it wants you to do are the things that are rightfully so. And the other thing is, one of the advantages you get in writing code is, even from test-driven development, one of the nice things I like about test-driven development is that it makes your code more cohesive, loosely coupled. It makes it more modular. And Grails gives you capability to write a more modular code. You can create a lot more templates for the view code. You can create your code in the control, but control can easily talk to either a Java code or a Groovy code in the library or the source directory. So you can start writing tests on them separately. So you can make the code as modular as you feel fit. And to me, that again is a great advantage. It's like being in a free society. You decide to do the right things and nobody stops you from doing it. You're not forced to do certain things, and you can use it's your judgment call at that point.
So this must help in the testing process also, because then you can bootstrap in particular pieces of test data that you in order to get feedback.
You could certainly do that. And also, configuration is minimum, and whenever configuration happens, it happens in Groovy code. So you don't have to go through the XML sophistication. So as a result, when you do decide that you want to make a change, a lot of times we don't want to make a change because, making that change is so hard. I got to change all these files. I got to make change in all these different places.
Yeah.
Or I got to go learn this laborious syntax that I'm not familiar with. I can't keep it in my head. It's much easier because you're working with code, and the code itself becomes configuration where it needs to. So that also helps a great deal to make the change affordable.
I had the opportunity to listen to Bob Martin recently give a keynote, and he said that features were not the main output of a developer, that code was the main output of a developer. Do you have any comments in regards to that particular statement?
I'm a huge fan of Uncle Bob. I've listened to him for several years. I've read his books. I like him a lot.
There's no doubt that he's a wonderful speaker. He's very great to listen to. He has great ideas.
So having said that, my interpretation from the statement, right, is that probably what he meant is that you cannot possibly be agile if your code sucks, right? Because
That's exactly what I think the message is that he was trying to get.
Exactly. And that is a very valuable thing to listen to. If you know, I could go to my customers and say, hey, I'm agile. Tell me what you want to change. And they tell you what they want to change. And then you come back and sit down and you say, wait a minute, last time I touched this code, I couldn't go home for the weekend. Heck no, I'm not going to change this. So there's this broken window theory, right, that from pragmatic programmers. We should care about our code a lot. Don't let anybody trash your code. If your code quality is very high, then you're able to respond to those change. So I'm not going to say, again, this comes back to my argument about whether the inner circle is important or the outer circle important. You cannot have one circle without the other. So I would take that statement and change it saying that the relevance of your features, more than features. I don't care about features too. I care about relevant features. I could think of features, oh, look how fancy it'll be to have these things. You know, there's studies that show that only about 20% of features in a software project actually gets used. What that means is we are working very hard to build complexity into software, wherein we should be working really hard towards building capability into software. Sometimes people come to you and say, we got a large application. I'm sorry, that doesn't mean anything to me. Large means that it's huge, it's fat, it's tall. That doesn't mean it's useful. Sometimes people say, we got a large team. What does that mean? Does it mean that you got all these incompetent people, that you need more people and more people? Again, these are not good metrics to drive by. If you say that you have an application that is highly valuable and people use most of what you provide, I think that means something. So I think we should ask ourselves, how do we build relevant working software? And if we focus on that, then the two things become very clear. We should focus on building relevant features and with high quality code. And you cannot have one without the other. You can have a beautiful code which nobody cares, and the project is a failure because you wasted money building it. Or you could have a very good application, but the minute people want to change it, you got back to the, you know, whack-a-mole problem, and you cannot keep up with the change. So I don't think, they're like two eyes. It's like me saying, my left eye is more important than the right eye. I don't think so. I need both the eyes to coordinate and do stuff most of the day. And to me, software quality, code quality is my right eye, and my relevant features that I develop is my left eye, and I would like to have both of them.
Well, and this comes into another question. It's like, how do I know that I'm writing quality code? Is there any way for me to tell?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think I write quality code.
Yeah. You know, most of us will think we're doing a good job. One of the other important things about agile development is to court criticism. It is such a sickening thought for anybody to sit here and say, I'm good and I cannot improve. What a sad thought that is. I want to say, I'm good, but I think I can learn and improve a lot more. So here's the best way to kill a code. You write code and nobody ever looks at it. Then what happens? The code ends up looking like my closet. My closet, I'm sure there's a tornado going inside my closet, right? You open it, a lot of things are chaotic. But my front yard in my house is beautiful. Two reasons. One, I care that others look at it. Second, my homeowners association is a pain in the neck. So when others look at it, it's of better quality. So one of the best ways to make sure our code is really of good quality is not to think so, but to prove so. And that is to have other people look at it. And there are two ways to do it. One is to pair program, develop along with the pairing. And even in pairing, one of the things I highly recommend is not to pair alone. Switch your pairs. We switch pairs every day. If I pair with you today, I'll pair with somebody else tomorrow on my team. That way, more people end up looking at the code. Collective ownership. Anybody can take the code and change it if they can take responsibility to change the code. What if I can't do pair programming? One of the other things we do on projects is code review. We finish the code, and before we are going too far, as soon as a task is done, we'll put it out and say, okay, here's the code. Find something that you can improve. And you court criticism. People look at it and they say, hey, I like it. Here are things I like in what you have done. Here are the things I recommend you could do. Why don't you break this method into smaller methods? And so on. I'm not a big fan of tools. You know, a fool with a tool is a bigger fool, so or a dangerous fool. But having said that, tools in the hands of good people can make a difference. Tools like code analysis tools. There are tools that can help you to look at code coverage. It's one thing to say we are doing testing. It's another thing to say we got fairly good code coverage. Sometimes people just install a testing tool, write few tests, and they claim that they are doing testing. That's like me getting on a treadmill once a month and claiming that I'm exercising, right? That doesn't count it. Mm-hmm. So it's important to show for ourselves and ask. So rather than saying my design is good, why don't you say that I want you to improve my design? Rather than saying my code is good, why don't you say I want you to improve my code? Then we are open for much more possibility of improvement. The more people read your code, I think the quality of code becomes better. You know, sometimes people say, well, the guy who wrote this code doesn't work here anymore and nobody understands this code. You always wonder, how could code become like that, such a liability? That happened like that because most of the project managers care about short-term gain. If you write code today and you're going to write the code tomorrow and you're going to continue to write the code rest of the week and rest of the month and rest of the year, you will be the fastest one to write this code. But in the process, you made the code more complex. You made the code unreadable by others. Come back from a vacation, you can't read it again. One of the reasons why people don't go on vacation, I guess. So it becomes really hard. The more people read your code, I think the quality of code improves automatically.
Well, assumes though that the people who are actually reading your code can make useful contributions to that.
You're absolutely right. And that is one of the reasons why code review should never be done by so-called priests. Some companies hire these priests. Priests are, these are experts. They don't write code anymore. They just review code. They become policemen. They walk around with a big stick. It doesn't work that way. If the person who reviews your code must be the person who would actually either pick up the code and change it next day or who had picked up the code and changed it yesterday. So this is a person who can actually collectively maintain the code and evolve the code. That's why it's a peer review, not a priest review.
Do you see any automated processes that actually help with this, with this activity, code reviews, check-ins, things like that?
There are certainly tools available to do this, but I would not. One of the advantages I find in people working together is helping with this so-called buzz factor.
What are the buzz factors?
Somebody said the buzz factor is the number of people who should be run over by a bus before your project fails.
So buzz factor.
Yeah, buzz factor.
Yeah, okay, no problem.
And not buzz, but
yeah.
Buzz.
The buzz factor.
The buzz factor, or the truck factor.
The truck factor.
Sadly,
well, the buzz factor could probably be something positive. Now.
Yeah.
You just coined a new expression here, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sadly, on a lot of projects, the buzz factor is one, right? One guy gets run over by a bus or a truck, the project is dead because he's the only one who knows a lot about a certain part of the system.
I've actually seen this happen. Not get hit by the bus, but how about the opposite? Win the lottery and walk in on Monday and mm-hmm. quit and just basically throw the whole schedule off by 6 to 8 months.
Exactly.
And I've seriously seen that happen.
Right. And this is where the short-term gain and a long-term loss, right? We don't want to spend all the money on hand. We want to invest the money for later purpose, right? Same concept.
Paired programming, that means I got two people doing the same job, and that doesn't seem so good. And you know, I don't like somebody looking over my shoulder all the time while I'm trying to do something anyways. And now you're going to add code reviews to all of this. So that means that everything that gets written is going to be read by someone else, and then there's probably going to be action items on it, and then I got to go through this whole bureaucratic process, and all of a sudden Agile isn't sounding so agile anymore. It's sounding more like it's going a lot slower, right? Agile is fast, isn't it?
That's a reasonable concern. I'm not an advocate of pair programming all the time, but I do have to admit that some of the times that I've been the most productive and have produced better quality code and also more code is when I paired up with somebody.
Twice as much?
Twice as much, or even more. More than twice as much. Because you are working towards writing a better quality code. Pair programming is not where one guy grabs the keyboard, the other grabs the mouse. Pair programming is where you're collectively working on solving the problem. If I'm writing code, you're thinking about test to write. If you're writing code, I'm thinking about the test to write. When we are stuck with something, we find problems right away. And I found it to be much more productive. But having said that, there are times when I cannot pair program all the time. Sometimes the guys I work with are in totally different city, different parts of the country or world sometimes. In those cases, interaction is the most important thing. We constantly chat. We are on the IM, one form or the other, asking questions, and we never get stuck. You don't get hired to come back after 7 days and say that you found an answer to a problem that's the first link on Google when you search for it. You get paid through get the work done, not to invent that everybody else in the world has already found out. We got to be very practical about it.
What is this code review too? I mean, it's like very bureaucratic, no?
Here is the reason why code review is a problem for a lot of people. In a lot of organizations, code review means you get together on a Thursday afternoon, project the code on a big screen, and start critiquing it. And people go through a lot of, you know,
Seen that happen.
You have not seen that happen, okay? you don't want to admit that you have seen that happen. Okay, I see it. Why doesn't that work? Here's the three reasons why it doesn't work.
There's only three?
At least three reasons why it doesn't work. The first reason is the guy who wrote the code says, wait a minute, you guys are going to get together and bash me the rest of the afternoon? I don't want your code review. And Susan over there says, look, I'm already behind schedule, and the last thing I want to do is look at that stinking code that other guy wrote. And the project manager says, hey guys, the last time you guys did code review, there was a fight going on, and one guy actually quit. No more code review for you. Code review is emotional, political, and it doesn't work. But here's how we do code review on projects. We never do code review like that at all. If I work on a task, my task usually is about a few hours, push it to half a day to a day. If I took a day to write it, how much time do you think you're going to take to read it? Given the fact that you're a peer, you're working on the code constantly. I'm not asking you to look at something you've never looked at, right? You are familiar with the concepts, you're familiar with, it is that I could have taken the code and implemented it, or you could have taken the code and implemented it on that very particular day. So instead of you writing it, I just wrote it, that's all. You probably take about 15-20 minutes to review it. And at the end of the 15-20 minutes, it's a very mature comment. You're just saying, here are the things I like. Oh, by the way, that's pretty cool. I haven't seen that being done. I'm going to take that and use it. That is a very positive comment to have. Not everything you look at will be negative. Not everything you look at will be positive. But it's for us to take note of both, because you want to give the positive feedback and a constructive criticism at the same time. So you would say, hey, look, I never saw you, I didn't know you could do that. That's pretty good, I'm going to use it. And the other thing you will say is, oh, that method, I think we can break it into smaller method. This segment can go into another method. You didn't say my code sucks. Instead, you're pointing on what kind of change would be good. But you're not policing this. Once you spend the 15-20 minutes, you give that comment to me and you're off. I read it, I accept it or I don't is up to me. If I need a clarification, I can always ask you. Now, I was mentioning this in Washington, D.C., and I wish I could give you more details as to whom I was mentioning to, but I cannot. But I was mentioning this to a person, and he said, "Oh, Venkat, we do this all the time on our project." I said, "You know what? That's great. Tell me about how it works for you." And he said, the way it works for him is, it either makes him a hero or makes him smarter. I said, "Look, two things. I'm going to steal that quote from you because that's a really lovely quote. The other thing is, I want you to explain what you mean by that." He said, when somebody reviews his code, when they find something really different from what they have seen before, they come back and say, "That's pretty darn good. I'm going to use it." That made him a hero. When they come and say, "You can improve the code, here are the changes," he has learned something in the process. And the next time he writes the code, he's going to think about it. So it's made him smarter. So the only two things that can happen in code review done that way with that positive attitude is either makes you smarter or makes you a hero. Now, why don't we want to have a process that makes us smarter or makes us hero? So, you know, almost every practice, anything that we do, can be done in a way where we can be productive with it, or we can do it in a way that it doesn't help us. And the whole idea about Agile, and that's where the retrospective is also on an Agile project. Retrospection is where you go back and say what's worked for you, what's not worked for you.
People don't want to do this type of activity here. You know, they don't want to look back. I've never seen a project really take on retrospective, and I think it's an important aspect of any project cycle.
I agree. And let's deviate totally from this for a second. I would say almost everybody you come across would agree that exercising is good for our health. Be in a meeting of 100 people. Ask them to raise the hand if they think exercising is good for them. Almost all of them will raise the hand. You tell them to leave their hand up if they actually exercise regularly. And you'll be surprised how few, many hands actually are up. So why is it that we all know that we become healthier when we exercise, yet we don't do it for ourselves? That is just human nature, isn't it? We care so much about short-term things, right? If you want to know all the excuses one can give, call my wife and ask her. I've given all possible excuses over the years.
And she's probably helped you too.
Well, actually, she's a caring woman. She has tried to convince me to exercise, and every time she did, I would give her another excuse. "Oh, I got this book I'm working on. I got to finish it this week. I've got this paper due. I've got to finish this project." And all these are so short-term goals. And in my case, it took me a long time, several years. And it got to a point where my health became a major issue. When I went to the doctor gave me all the medicines. None of them made a difference. Then I went to the doctor and he said, "Venkat, this is going to surprise you. I know exactly what's going to solve your problem, but I don't know if you want to take it." I said, "What is it?" "A very mild exercise. I know that's a commitment on time, but that's what you need to do." And I said, "You know what? I don't want to do it. But I'm hurting, so I better do it." So I started doing a mild exercise. Tell you what, the human mind is so tricky. On the third day, I was like, "Wow, I'm cured. I don't need this stuff." And I stopped. A week later, problem is back. So now I'm totally committed to exercising. In fact, it really bothers me with my travel schedule when I don't find a good place where I can go exercise. In some parts of the world, you just don't get facility to exercise. But nobody needs to come and convince me today that exercising is good. I'm totally convinced. Why? Because I have a problem. The problem was more painful than solution. So if you are not feeling the pain on your software projects, don't use these things. But if you're feeling the pain and you don't solve it, that's called whining. And I think it's important for, I'm not talking about you personally, I'm just talking about people who are not.
Anybody who knows me, tell me, will say, "I never whine about anything."
Sure. So, as a community, I'm saying, right, if we are sitting there and identifying the problems, but we don't want to do anything about it, that's whining. But agility is not about whining. Agility is any practice, any methodology that becomes prescriptive and dogmatic will fail. And that is the case with agility also. So don't take it by the book. Find what you should use based on your need. And this is where I think one of the questions that often people don't understand, take the time to ask the question, why? Why am I doing it? If you understand why you're doing it, you may find out that what or how may not apply to you, and there may be a different way to do it for your own project, and we can benefit from it. So, and that is again the basis of agility, in my opinion. Agility is not about doing something. Agility is first understanding what the concern is and then coming up with solutions that solve that particular problem. If we ignore all of that and simply do TDD, simply do, you know, stand-up meetings, simply do these things, then we are interested in a ceremony and not a solution.
So you're saying we have to swallow the whole elephant in this case?
It doesn't have to be the whole elephant. It is first understanding what the problem is that we are trying to solve. My problems are not the same as your problems. You know, for a guy with a knee injury, a certain form of exercise may not be the correct solution. If I ask him to go on the treadmill, he's going to have a problem, more problem on the knee. So we cannot just ask everybody to go on the treadmill. And all these practices to a great extent are instructions to go on the treadmill. And we need to ask ourselves, what are we trying to solve? And I think that is the bigger picture about agility. Agility, you know, all these practices, all these methodologies are means to an end. But the end is not any of these. The end is to be successful in what we do. And we need to take the time to figure that out, I think. And if we don't do that, we're going to try a few things, find it doesn't work for us. And sometimes it doesn't work for us because we're not doing it right. Sometimes it doesn't work for us because that's not going to help us solve the problem at all. So I think as mature adults, we should sit down and ask ourselves what problem we are trying to solve and then find the solution for it. I find it to be a lot more effective. Otherwise, we are just being hypocritical sometimes. We are more interested in complaining about problems and finding solutions sometimes. These are not insurmountable problems.
But that's not a complaint, is it?
Certain things are not a complaint. Certain things are not.
You're not whining right now, are you? Because it sounds like a big long whine. But
In a sense, I'm whining about our industry.
But at least you're trying to come up with a solution. I mean, you have written a book about, you know, what to do about the whines, right? So it's not just whining. Or could I say you were whining all through the book? I don't know.
Well, actually, personally, I would like to say I have been very fortunate in my life to be associated with some fantastic people whom I have been related to, whom I have had the privilege of working with, who I've been friends with, who have actually time and again showed me that you could work towards a solution rather than working towards a problem. When I go to them with whining, as human nature we do, sometimes they wake me up and say, Venkat, don't come and complain to me about what I cannot do for you. Tell me what I can do to fix this for you. And I've seen this in business setting. I've seen this in my personal setting. And yes, I've also seen the part of the world where people just whine. But it's so refreshing when you find people who actually are focused on solving problems. And I think at the end of the day, each one of us can say, you know, given so many hours of the day, how can I spend more time doing something more useful than just complaining about things? And I think if we focus on that, I think we can solve a lot of problems that just seems to be, you know, throwing us in a spin over and over and over. I don't know, I'm just getting philosophical, I guess.
Well, that sounds like good advice just for life in general. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for having me.